Surprise attacks were not uncommon in colonial New England. While the French and English wrestled for control of North America, native groups rushed to ally themselves with the competing powers. Taking captives was standard practice on all sides. Historian and Abenaki Indian Marge Bruchak.
Northfield is burned to the ground 3 times. East Hampton is attacked. Northampton is attacked. Captives are taken again and again.
The more the colonists heard about raids, the more anxious they probably became, and on February 29th, the sound of hatchets on wood woke the Reverend John Williams, as he later recounted the story in his memoir, The Redeemed Captive.
They came to my house in the beginning of the onset, and by their violent endeavors to break open doors and windows with axes and hatchets, awakened me out of sleep.
The main objective of many natives that morning was to take captives rather than to kill. They carried cords to bind the prisoners and special moccasins to protect their feet on the long march that lay ahead.
Because part of what happens in the captivity process is that you decide who of these people you will keep. Who will you ransom back? Who will you trade? And who will you keep and incorporate into your community?
But many were killed because they resisted capture or were seen as too young or infirm to survive the long trek to Canada. The staunchly Puritan Williams viewed the attack as a test from God, even as 2 of his own children were murdered, a daughter born just 6 weeks earlier and a 6-year-old son.
And for my poor children, family, and Christian neighbors, I begged of God to remember mercy in the midst of judgment, that he would so far restrain their wrath as to prevent their murdering of us.
More than 250 attackers, 48 of them French and the rest native allies, had entered the village when their lead scout had scaled the stockade fence built to protect the houses. Historian John Demos.
This fence might well have protected the town, except that there had been an unusually snowy period in that winter, so that the snow drifts went right up to the top of the fence and provided a much easier means of access.
Clearly, Demos says, this was a well-thought-out attack.
And I think there is indirect evidence that they had a pretty good sense of what Deerfield looked like, even, you know, right up to that moment when they actually chose to attack. I think they knew where people's houses were. I think they knew the layout of the place.
Indeed, many knew the layout well because they had a relationship trading with the Deerfield residents. And just a few years earlier, more than 100 Abenaki natives had attempted to resettle in the Deerfield area, only to be driven out by the English. Marge Bruchak.
Which is the other thing that a lot of the historians have failed to see, is that even when those attacks were a constant fact of life, there were very intricate and very intimate relationships being formed between those groups of seemingly opposing peoples. And even the attack on Deerfield itself, one of the last things the attackers did as they left the town was to leave a mailbag with letters from other captives hanging on a tree.
Taking the Reverend Williams captive was a well-calculated move by the attackers, says Donald Friary, former director of the organization Historic Deerfield.
The minister was the leading man in the community. He was the best educated. He certainly was among the wealthiest in the community, and he was a real symbol. And the Reverend John Williams was taken captive, probably intentionally by the Indians and the French, as a symbol, but also because he was valuable in the exchange of captives. He was worth more.
41 English, nearly 1/3 of the village, and 6 raiders were killed in the attack. 112 of those who survived were ushered out of their now burning houses into the crisp morning light.
About sun an hour high, we were all carried out of the house for a march, and saw many of the houses of my neighbors in flames. Who can tell what sorrows pierced our souls when we saw ourselves carried away from God's sanctuary, to go into a strange land.
Many of those gathered outside were children, hardy children, whom the French and native allies believed could endure the rigorous march to Canada. 5 of the Williams children had survived, including 7-year-old Eunice. Crossing the icy Deerfield River, natives carried children to safety on the other side. Meanwhile, a rescue attempt was underway. At the first sign of smoke over Deerfield, a group of 40 or so English militiamen were sent out from neighboring Hatfield and Hadley. Just outside Deerfield, another battle erupted as the militia attempted, unsuccessfully, to rescue the captives.
It's a story in the heart to know what people must have felt like when Williams describes the people gathering at the foot of this hill.
Educator Gail Blacksnake stands on the hillside overlooking the meadows of Deerfield, where Williams and his neighbors were gathered as the last battle was fought. She often brings young students here to teach them about the raid and the rescue attempt.
And always comes back to me the sounds and the smells. You must have been able to smell Deerfield burning. And the 40 men from Hatfield came across that field throwing off their coats, throwing off their hats, because they were running, trying to rescue people they loved. And the hope that must have been in their hearts and their eyes, and the gunfire dies down, and oh, it's not going to happen.
By the time it was all over, 9 more English and at least 5 attackers were dead. But the rest continued on to Canada. The following day, Williams's wife, Eunice Sr., who had given birth just 6 weeks earlier, began to falter. She finally collapsed while fording the Green River, and one of her captors then killed her with a blow to the head. Scholars today generally view the killing of Eunice Williams and other captives too weak to carry on as humane.
Well, what you can hear here is really Eunice's death song. This was her death song. The river rushing is probably one of the last things she heard before she got in that cold water.
After months of struggle, separation, and loss, 90 of the 112 captives arrived in Canada. For WFCR, I'm Susanna Lee.